Welcome to the Bring the Wood podcast. It's your boy RK, and I'm rocking today with D. What's going on, D?
What's going on? How are you?
Man, you know what I always laugh about? If I have a guest on the podcast, like we talk prior, right? And then I got to come back onto the podcast and introduce you like we ain't just been talking. So
that's always awkward.
I always feel cheesy doing it, but I'm like, the people didn't hear our conversation, so I got to introduce you. First of all, let's tell the people who you are. Who you are, D. Tell the people.
I am D, as he said. I am a avid Saints fan. I always have been. I am from Louisiana, about an hour outside of New Orleans. Saints Soldier on Twitter. So if y'all are into the following the Saints on Twitter, y'all give me a follow. I always follow back if I see you. Just, hey, D, follow me, and I will.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's definitely I'm a huge Saints fan. I've always been since I was a little girl, and people always say, how did you get into it as a little girl? And it's always the same answer. It's my dad.
Yeah.
My dad was a huge Saints fan.
Okay.
And I just sat in his lap and screamed at the TV, didn't know what I was screaming at. And I didn't know what I was screaming at until, you know, the game started making sense to me. He would explain a little bit, and then I became a bigger fan than he did eventually. So, and now it's just me and my brothers. My dad passed away some years back, but he kind of left that love for the Saints in our hearts. Sometimes I'm angry for him, angry with him about it, but we are here, you know, so.
Yeah, that's dope. Like, I'm from Winnipeg, Canada, so, like, I'm far away, but I've been in New Orleans 13 times, and I still remember, I grew up, I had a cousin in Lafayette, and he came down to visit me when I was a kid. And, you know, we'd play Madden, or I guess back then it was Tecmo Bowl. We played Tecmo Bowl, yeah. And we played Tecmo Bowl, and I played with New Orleans, and he's always like, yeah, you got to play with New Orleans, you got to play with New Orleans. So well, I'd watch the games whenever we get a chance to watch them, because they were never really on TV up here in Canada. We had to, like, you know, kind of scrip and scrounge to get the games on. But then when I finally got to watch them, I was probably, I don't know, just becoming a teenager, Aaron Brooks times.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I was like, man, if I played with Aaron Brooks in Madden, I just, like, Boo Williams, Willie Jackson, like, I would crush you. It didn't matter who you try to bring to me. And then later on, a Canadian joined the team, right? You guys had Jerome Paython.
Jerome Paython, yeah. Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And Paython was, like, a good dude. Like, when he came back home, like, that guy was, he's just quality person, you know what I mean? He'd do lots for the kids, and I just, my love for the Saints just grew and grew and grew until it became like this insane fandom where, like, you couldn't talk to me on a Sunday. Like, you gotta leave me alone. You gotta just, especially because it was so bad for so many years. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's the ups and downs, you know. People, I think a lot of Saints fans, they have trouble with the last 5 years because of the way that all those years have ended. But if we're being honest if we're being honest with ourselves, we all saw the decline in Drew from what we saw from Drew in 2009, 2011, 2013. We saw that decline, and it was like he fell off a cliff. You know what I mean? Like, for the ability for him to...
It was a steep,
yeah,
deep fall.
But his accuracy still allowed you to see us have some success, because the way that the organization built through the draft and, like, the very poignant free agents that they brought in really allowed the Saints to keep competitive, and not just so much competitive, but actually create a stunted growth in the Falcons and the Panthers. And I say that as they were always building to beat the Saints from 2 years prior.
So
they never caught up to what Sean was doing. So now, you know, they've been in this, like, I guess you could say purgatory. Like, the Falcons had their one drink of water when everybody stayed healthy and they went to the Super Bowl. But, you know, God willing, they lost that thing 28-3.
Oh, man. I don't know if we could have dealt with that one. I don't know if I didn't know how I was going to react if they took that ring. I was like, man,
yeah.
I was preparing all kind of jokes. It just wasn't working, though.
Yeah, I would have had a hard time on Twitter for a couple months. But
it was bad.
But yeah, so it's been pretty phenomenal to watch this team and watch the amount of success they've had, even though the endings have hurt, you know, and they have hurt the way that's happened. Like, you know, I was at the game for the Minneapolis Miracle. I was in the stands.
Oh, my God.
My best friend, my best man at my wedding, he booked the flight to Philly. Well, after we scored, he booked the flight to Philly.
No.
And we had to cancel the flight. Like, he was, like, so excited for me. And he's like, I booked the flight. Don't worry about it. I got you. We'll go. I booked yours, too. And I'm like, sitting there on pins and needles, just being like, let this game end, let this game end.
Please
And then
let it end.
And then it never ended. So if we I'm going a little bit off topic here, but you think about that. If we get past that game, we're beating Philly.
Oh, we're beating Philly. No questions asked. Like, and then I think about that a lot, and I think about 2011. It's like those years are so similar. Because yeah. if we get past the 40, there's no way the Giants are beating us. Like
In the dome. No,
like, come
no,
on, man.
No,
like,
they're getting drubbed.
They're getting, absolutely. By the skull, it would have been so bad. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would have been bad. But it's just those type endings the Saints have just fallen victim to for the last year, like previous years. This year, even the feel is different this year because for the last three years,
mm-hmm.
the regular season kind of felt consistent.
Mm-hmm.
We knew we were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
We knew we were going to win. We knew, but it was kind of boring in a sense, but we did not know how the playoffs were going to go.
Yeah.
We did not, we knew we were going to make it, but we did not know how they were going to go.
Yeah.
And they have been heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak. But this year, every game is like sitting on pins and needles because you don't know what team is coming out of the tunnel.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So yeah, so it's pretty wise, man. Yeah, as a Saints fan, but you have to enjoy it.
Yeah,
I mean you really do because they're giving you can see the effort every game. You can see it. You can see the growth. You can see the youth.
I agree.
And I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, like the analogy that I have for the last 4 years, you know, for me is that it's like a shooter. Like, you're 100% right. We knew we were going to win a lot of regular season games. But then when you get to the playoffs, all of a sudden you tense up. So I think that even Sean Payton and the coaching staff, Dennis Allen, I think they tensed up because, like, if you get a three-point shooter, you get Steph Curry, and he's smooth. But sometimes if Steph's got a lot of pressure on him and he's stiff, he's not going to stroke that three the same way he would if he's just feeling loose and just playing. You know what I mean? And, like,
right.
I felt like that was us in the playoffs. Like, we knew we were a quality team. And we knew that we could win these games. And there is no business Tampa Bay had to beat us in the dome. But we got tense. We got tense. You know what I mean? And everybody
got tense.
Everybody wants to get on Jared Cook. And I will tell you right now, Jared Cook felt it the worst because the downfall of having good fans, like the downfall of having a dramatic and ecstatic fan base like the Saints have, is that when things go bad, oh, they're going to shit on you. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, and so
oh,
like,
yeah.
When Jared Cook had that bad game against Kansas City, you remember that game? Like,
I do. Like, absolutely, I do.
It's like Saints fans just said, we are done with this guy. Like, they literally, it was like, you heard them on Twitter. Like, Saints Twitter is a beautiful thing because you can go there and get anything you want. But, like, you saw Jared Cook getting dragged over to Coles and you're just like, like, yo, let this man be. Like, like, we need him. And you got like 30,000 people on Twitter saying this man's this, that, and it looks like Beetlejuice and all this other business.
Oh,
like,
my.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they were relentless.
Yeah.
They were relentless.
And so that man wants out. So now this guy's trying to finish off his contract and get the hell out of Dodge because he's like, these people hate me. And like, he's human. We have to remember these guys are human. So he reads that shit and then he comes back and he's like, man, why am I out there busting my tail, getting concussions and yada, yada, yada if these guys don't really feel me? And Drew's trying to, you know, stay with him. But at the same token, Drew's probably irritated. He's got this grown man who's a veteran acting like a child, you know?
Right.
So it was tough. You know, the fumble, people want to blame the fumble. I also want to blame the fact that Sean got so tight with some of those play calls in that game. And it was just like, you can't have Drew trying to play comeback. You know what I mean? Like, when we have the lead, let's keep our foot on the throttle and keep doing what's working and stop trying to do all this like rinky dink stuff and then punt. And then now, you know, Tampa's got another chance because Brady wasn't playing well, you know, and it just kind of, anyways, I could talk about that game for 5 hours. It's just drives
me nuts. Right. But you're absolutely right though. And you make a great point. Sean Payton tends to overcoach sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
His talent is there. The team is extremely talented. Is always there, but sometimes he takes the air out of the sails from the team because he's so afraid of the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know when that started to happen. I guess because with Drew's decline, that started to kind of creep up as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's so afraid of the mistake, and then when the mistake happens, it just kind of crumples over into itself. And we've watched it in that way the whole time. He's kind of coaching against himself a lot.
You're 100% right.
So, I want to kind of go back to the Jared Cook thing because you know I was all over Jared Cook.
Okay.
I was all over him.
Yeah, I saw.
But, I was all over him. But the whole thing with the Jared Cook is, and I think this goes for every player for the Saints. And you've been to New Orleans multiple times, but the Louisiana culture is simply this. You have to be able to take a good joke and fight back.
Mm-hmm.
Because the city, the state, and everything is built on resilience. Mm-hmm. If Jared Cook would have come out the next whatever game and had an amazing game, the jokes would have ended. Yeah. Now we're back on the bandwagon. Like, we're like, okay, he fought back. You know, this, that. But the whole thing was his reaction to everything was, it is what it is.
Yeah, he was.
That's
soft.
The worst attitude
soft.
To have as a Saints fan. I mean, as a Saints player, that is the worst attitude that you can have. You saw how everybody reacted to Mike Thomas when he didn't get the surgery. And Mike Thomas is one of the best wide receivers that to ever play the game. And we're like, why didn't you get the surgery? Now everybody's like, Colin, like, get off our team. Like, trade him. How much can we get for him? Like, it's like, if you don't want to be here, we don't want you here. And that's that type. Yeah. Love and camaraderie that we have for our team, and it kind of depicts it's like I said, it's toxic in a way, but at the same time, you know, it's fulfilling in a way, you know, because especially if it pushes the team to win.
100%. If you love the city, the city loves you back, and I think
absolutely.
I think at the same time, when you talk about sports in general, we're building a lot of like I think across all sports, like even you look at the WNBA, you look at everything like. All sports completely. We're building a lot of people that can't take adversity. They can't take, you know, when things go wrong. They're not able to recover after they fail. And like, I think I'm a school teacher. Like, you got to put yourself in a sense of like, you want kids to fail because you learn more from failure than you do from repeated success. Like, everything's easy. That's the Reggie Bush syndrome. Everything in Reggie Bush's life was easy. He won everywhere. Everything was easy. He came to the NFL in his first couple years. He wasn't a good running back. He was a good returner. He was a good catcher, but he wasn't a good running back because he didn't learn about failure. And he was expecting it to be easy because everything has come easy. Like, you're right. Jared Cook is part of this, like, this new problem, this new paradigm of athlete where things go wrong and you can't just like buckle up and be like, listen, I'm gonna come back stronger. That's what I love about Mike. Like, Mike is there. Oh, you listen. I'm not dumb enough. I'm not dumb enough to make the analogy that Mike is Michael Jordan. So don't twist it on
no,
that.
But when
Mike lost to the Pistons, you remember when he went to the weight room and this guy was getting, like, he got yoked and he came back
he was big.
And he's like, you punch me all you want. I'm built for this. Like, Mike Thomas is that guy. I believe, like, right now he's reading. He's a lunatic. I don't think Mike is a normal. I don't think Michael Thomas is a normal, rational human being. I think that there's something...
He's not.
There's something wrong with him. So I think
absolutely. Absolutely. I said the same thing. Absolutely. Something's wrong with him.
He's reading your tweet. He's reading my tweet. He's reading everything. And I think when he gets a catch, he's going to be looking at the stands, looking at people being like, what now? Like, he's got a giant chip bigger than the entire Superdome on his shoulder. And I think that that's going to pay dividends, especially coming into when he comes back. But let me jump into this really quick. Mm-hmm. We got Mike coming back. He's not coming back this week. Remember, you were just talking about Sean Payton overcoaching.
Right.
Do you think that Sean Payton's overcoaching is the result of why we're getting... Sorry, it's not... And not is the result. Is resulting in why we're seeing what we're seeing from Jameis and the inability to throw across the middle... kind of pumping and holding a lot of the time. What are your thoughts on that?
So I kind of compare Jameis to a rookie, and people say, oh, he's been in the league forever, but our offense is so complicated. Mm-hmm. It's complex. I'm gonna use the word complex. It's complex, and with Jameis, he's never run an offense as complex, and he's never had to be in a situation where he doesn't have his center, who is the brains of the operation of the Saints offense, always has been. Yeah. Like, you know, even with Drew, his center was so vastly important, right? Eric McCoy goes down. Jameis is now in a situation where, oh my goodness, he has to be able to call out blitzes. He has to be able to check. He has to be able to, you know, understand the playbook to the fullest extent very quickly. Mm-hmm. It was fine. I understood his overcoaching or protecting his QB and his offense initially. But when we hit the Giants game, and I was at this game.
The big butt. I heard the
Oh, I was at this game, and I saw the light bulb come on for Jameis. Mm-hmm. I saw it come on.
The 10 in a row, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man. He felt it, and he understood it, which was a huge thing. When he threw the long touchdown to Kenny Stills, called back for holding. Right. Yeah. You got called back. You felt the air go out of the sails of the Superdome because it wasn't until they saw Taysom trot on. Mm-hmm. And people were like, what are you doing? Literally, people were screaming, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. In the stand, like we were in the like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? And you saw what the result turned out to be, right? It was an interception. Like, why would you even try? I don't know. But mm-hmm. My whole thing is that no matter if we call Sean out for overcoaching everything, Sean is going to be Sean Payton. Mm-hmm. And he's going to say, I don't care what you say. This is how I'm going to coach the team. I'm not going to admit that I was right. I'm not going to admit that it was a horrible call, a horrible play call during that time. You know, I feel like, you know, this is what it is, what it is, but it's kind of putting us in a situation where, you know, everybody's questioning more so why is Jameis hesitating or why is the offense sputtering. You can see the interactions on the sideline. You know, Jameis always feels like he's in question, mm-hmm. and that bothers me.
Can I jump in here for 2 seconds?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you say that Jameis always feels like he's questioned, do you know when I saw that change? When Taysom got hurt in Washington. So I really believe that Sean Payton's love affliction for Taysom Hill, it's positive, but it also has a large negative connotation to Jameis's growth.
Totally agree.
So the fact that Taysom got a concussion, I thought Jameis looked like he wasn't looking over his shoulder to see if he's coming off the field. He got in a rhythm and he looked like he was playing better football. The pick he threw is Pete's fault. That's not anybody else's fault.
Yeah, that was
so. Like Andres Pete is gonna Andres Pete, so we just have to deal with that. But
we got it.
But I think going forward, if Taysom's not 100%, I think they're gonna keep Taysom out because I think that there's smarter people than us that have mentioned this to Sean, and maybe Sean's even seen it. And they're protecting Sean from himself, being like, let's just leave Taysom out for a couple days. You know what I mean? And just tell Taysom. And because now Vanette's coming back and we have our tight end room back. So, like, where does Taysom get in? Are we taking Kamara off the field? Like, is Taysom going to be our short yardage guy? Like, that's really where his value is for our team. Because his value coming in at quarterback is not positive for us unless it's inside the 3-yard line.
There you go.
Right.
And you know what else? And I'm glad you mentioned Kamara. Have you ever noticed Kamara's body language with Taysom is in the game? He hates it. He hates it. And it's actually taking touches from Kamara too. So
Is Kamara, because you've been a Saints fan for a long time, just like myself. Is Kamara the most honest body language Saints fan we've ever had?
The most honest body language Saints player we have ever had.
I think Joe Horn was on that as well. Like, I felt like Joe, he wore his emotions on his sleeve. But like, Alvin's not a super loud talker, but you just see him when he's like vexed, my man will put his head down and just be like, man, what the f-? You know what I mean? And he hits that stride where you look at him and you're like, okay, I'm gonna do this because you're telling me to do this, but like, I ain't happy. Right. And Sean looks at him like, you good? And he has to kind of just lie to him and be like, yeah, let's go. Like you want to run counter again right into this defense when we're getting pumped every single time and I'm getting popped in the mouth by the Will. Yeah, let's just run it, Sean. That's a good idea. And you can see he's not combative, but you can tell he's not excited.
He can't help himself.
Yeah, he's honest.
He cannot help himself.
The interviews, he's honest.
And I love it.
Yeah, like it's.
I love it.
I think out of all the Saints, so let me just get, we're going to get into the game, but this is like fluid for me, so I just want to stay on, I don't want to lose my train of thought. When you think of your favorite 3 Saints, active and then not active, who do you got? Like, for me, I'll give you my not active guys, and I don't go with the stars, because I love Drew, and like, you could always go with the, you know, the chalk kind of players, but like, for me, Devery Henderson for me was like, him and Mike McKenzie, those two guys, I'm telling you, like, anytime they made a play, I was screaming like they was my kin. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be screaming at you, like, yeah! And then, like, a weird one for me, because he had such a short Saints career, but Anthony Hargrove, his story was, it was remarkable. Amazing. And to watch him, get a Super Bowl, you know, and to be a part of that roster, like, I was just like, that, for me, that's what sports is about. Like, I speak to my wife and when I coach these kids out here, I'm like, lots of things happen. You get caught in the peripherals of a lot of things, but that's why sports is important. Like, when it changes people's lives and it makes you feel a certain something, like, that's the whole point of it. So Anthony Hargrove, McKenzie, and Devery Henderson were my three pass guys. Do you have your three pass players that you...
Absolutely. So we got to go with Michael Bierman. You have to go with the beer man,
Mr. Lewis.
Like, you can't, that story in itself, like, I was delivering beer one week and next week I'm running touchdowns in the dome. Come on, man.
Yeah.
You cannot beat that. Like, that's awesome. Then, of course, I have a love, and you probably know this because you follow me on Twitter. I have a love for offensive linemen because I feel like they don't get the love and respect that they deserve. Willie Rolfe is one of my favorite past Saints players. Like,
that's kind of That's kind of chalk, though. He's the Hall of Fame.
I understand. He's Hall of Fame, but it's just like, it was a sincere love for Willie Rolfe. Like, it was just,
Hey, question for you. Who's more talented? Sure. Who's more talented? Who had a better career? Teron Armstead? Teron Armstead or Willie Rolfe? Who's more talented?
Oh, my God.
You know it's Teron.
I'm going to say Teron. And it's not because I love him so much as a player and a person, but I just feel like, you know, as an offensive lineman, when you're running four whatevers, come on, man. Yeah. Like, that's hard to beat. Then you're coming from an HBCU. That's real.
I stood next to homeboy when I was there. I got to, so a friend of mine was dating Cam Meredith. They got kids now. Okay. So he gave me some passes so I come up and meet the players when I was there. I was there for the Washington game when Drew broke the record. And so, like, I didn't get to meet Drew because he never got out of interviews. Like, Drew and Mike stayed in interviews the entire time. But I got to meet, go up and meet, like, Teron Armstead and have a chat with him. I met Cam Jordan, talked to him for a while. Man, his little kid's a badass little kid. Like, he don't listen to nobody. Like, Cam Jordan's kid don't listen to nobody. My kid, hey, listen, segue. This kid walked up to the food table and slapped, like, $40 worth of food just on the ground and was like,
Are you serious?
Oh, he's a bad little man.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I got to meet all of them, and, like, that was pretty, I was pretty dope standing next to Tronk. So I was like, he's not that big. Like, looking at him.
No, he's not.
He's not that big, but to see how impressive he is as a left tackle against 300-pound men that are moving so fast, I'm like, he is a special, special athlete. So, yeah, he's one of those guys that goes on, like, the Mount Rushmore of Saints offensive linemen. Anyways, yeah. I cut you off. So you got Willie Rolfe, and you got your boy. Who do you got next?
The beer man. Then you're making it tough on me. okay, I think I'm going to go with, and this might be because – I mean, anybody from the Dome Patrol, and I know, you know, it's kind of par for the course, but everybody, but I just, that was my time. Like, that was just my time. Like, I had the t-shirt, I had the posters, I was just, like, completely just indulged. And then honorable mention, he's got to be Ricky Smoke 'Em Up Williams, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, man, he's such a cool dude. He's such a cool dude. I wish he didn't cost...
He really is a great guy. Like, he really is. I met him a couple of times.
I wish he didn't cost us a full draft.
My dick.
Gosh, he's like, we want this guy. What do you have to give up? Everything. Sold.
Everything is sold. Stamp. I'm saying the wedding dress thing. It was just an embarrassment the whole time. Man. I don't know. Man. Ricky used to do interviews with his helmet on, and
that's a good one. So, I'll let you lead this one. So, who are your favorite three active players now?
Active players right now is Alvin Kamara, because he's just
special.
I think he's a generational talent. Like, we won't see that for a long time.
No.
Teron Armstead, of course, and Michael Thomas. And I put an asterisk by Michael Thomas's name because I want to see how he responds, which I think he's going to come out with his hair on fire, but I want to see how he responds after this injury. I want to see how he responds after, because I don't, he's never dealt with injury like this before. So I want to really see how he responds. But yeah, right now I like the grit, the toughness, the honesty, and just the outright talent of all three of those guys.
For me, Marshawn Lattimore, I played corner, and I watched Sean and his growth, like even mentally, just understanding certain schemes and not falling asleep in it when he's in it. And the way that he's playing right now with a cast, even though he just got paid, like, I just think that Marshawn Lattimore, he'll never get mentioned by the NFL media as a top three DB. They'll always say, oh yeah, he's a nice player, but they'll always put like Tre'Davious White, and they'll put Stephon Gilmore, and and they'll put Jalen Ramsey, and they always talk about all those guys because they're chalky and don't talk about Sean. But what Sean's doing is recognized by PFF now, and he's the lockdown guy. The New York Giants game, you could put that on Sean and DA. Marshawn Lattimore didn't play great, but that's not on Marshawn Lattimore that entire game. There's a lot to go into that fact, and him trying to make a play because his team is bleeding. You know, trying to sit on Saquon is not. I'm not gonna kill him for that. So, Marshawn for me, obviously Alvin Kamara, and here's a weird one for you. And this is more out of what I think this could be versus what it is now, but I think Marquez Callaway. And I know he. I think that his growth has been stunted because he had to be the number one, and teams are scheming him now, so he can't really do a ton. But he still did a little bit. Like, he got a couple touchdowns, and he is a kid that plays so damn hard. Like, you watch him run his routes, he doesn't win all the time, but he is working. Like, you never see him take like plays off even in the run game. And I think that Sean Payton is going to really find that endearing, and keep him in the game plan when Mike and Traquan get back, and try and give him even more looks because he's going to reward him for doing all the dirty work while they were gone.
I agree. Mark, the expectations put on his shoulders this year out of nowhere.
Yeah. UDFA.
He did well. I applaud him for that. And you're right. He doesn't take a playoff. He's a very, very, very hard worker. And I feel like, you know, with him getting a little help back with Traquan, I hope he stays healthy.
We're getting three games. You know, listen, if Traquan and Davenport both play more than three games the rest of the season, that is icing on the cake. That's lanyap for you, okay? Y'all peeps that don't know, that's that little extra.
It's a little extra.
It's a little more powder sugar.
But my question for you, and I know this is kind of off subject, man, but these are the things that I think about at 3 a.m. when I'm thinking about the Saints. Marcus Davenport comes off IR, right? He's ready to go. Now Peyton Turner is back on the no practice list because his calf hurts.
Yeah,
what is going on? Are we ever going to see those two together?
I'll be honest with you. So this is how I'm different than a lot of people. We only need one of them right now. Like, the depth is we only need one of them right now. And I'm going to be honest, the one that we need is Marcus Davenport because he's ingratiated into the system already. He knows a lot more about that system and what Nielsen's doing, more so than a rookie who's in his sixth game who already missed three games. You know what I mean? So, like, if we're looking at what Peyton Turner can add, again, I just said it, it's lanyap. It's extra. He's the guy that's going to get rotational snaps behind Granderson and Davenport. You know what I mean? And maybe pull Cam off the field a couple times, or if Cam ever got injured, because Cam's not winning pass rushing
at all.
But he is getting hurries, but he's not winning and getting sacks. He's not finishing. So,
right.
But the thing is, like, right now, and I watched a lot of film study. I can't remember who did it, but I watched it and I want to give them credit. It'll come to me. But they were talking about how the Saints are being double teamed because they're not getting any interior pressure. So teams are playing single in the middle. Because Roach can't win, Tuttle can't win, Ringo can't win, Huggins can't win. So they're really allowing those guys to go single up with the center or the guard, and then they're doubling the other side so that we don't get a pass rush off the edge from those guys. So I think the biggest thing is when we get Onyemata back, you know what I mean? When Onyemata comes back, I think that makes everything on the outside. You're going to see Cam Jordan winning a lot more because he's going to be singled up, and you're going to see the freaks like Davenport and Granderson, who are athletic freaks, really like get 2-3 sacks in a game. And that's going to change the defense complexity completely because you already can't run against us. That's a given. If we have Kwan, if you're in third and long and we have Kwan in the game because he's a better coverage linebacker than Pete Werner, right. Mm-hmm. Now you can't pass across the middle. So you're going to try and get to the boundary or the edge in under 2 seconds with like a singled up guy on the right tackle spot against Cam or against Davenport. Like it's just, it provides us so much more when we know we can win in the middle. And that's why, like, in the offseason, I was like, why are we not going after somebody in the middle? Like, somebody, because we know we lost Onyemata for 6 games. We should get somebody.
And I tweeted this when this happened. I said that I think Sean Payton was fine with what we had, which, you know, we were all in panic. And he was like, we're fine with what we have in the middle. And obviously, you see the lack of pass rush that we have because I'm your mama is what we call it. Yeah. It's not there to get that push in the middle. But my problem, well, not problem, but I just feel like the Saints are not putting, or DAR, or the defensive lineman coach is not putting Cam in a position to do so. I think they should move him to the interior sometime. Let him use his skill and strength instead of just trying to use his speed from the end. I understand he's getting doubled. Yeah. Elite pass rushers tend to do that, but yeah. You know, sometimes they win, you know, but Cam is not even winning when he's single.
Yeah. It's tough. That's a tough one though, because he is winning. Like, and I'm not just trying to be an advocate like against what you're saying.
No. I get what you're saying.
Like he's winning and he's getting to the quarterback sometimes. Like the game was against the Giants. Like he was literally like a curly red hair away from getting a sack fumble on Daniel Jones. Like he just missed it on the swipe. You know what I mean? Like he had Daniel Jones pushing out to the right side and he was right on him and he just missed it. And you're just like, oh, you're like, you're so close. And he's been so close on those plays. And I don't think it's so much of a lack of speed. I just think that right now he's getting a little bit of bad luck in the sense that he's not getting home. He's never been a fast guy. We've never seen Cam.
He's never been a speed rusher.
Yeah, he's not an elite. He's not an elite pass rusher in the sense of like when he gets double digit sacks, he's earned them on technique. You know, and like and also a really good defensive line, a good defensive line coach. But anyways, I think Cam gets a bit of a bad rap on that, but I do think he is getting older, and I think having that youth infusion on the other side, paired with a beast in the middle, and would you call him Onyemata?
I'm your mama.
So, yeah. Well, let's talk about the game coming in. We got this game in Seattle. I know you know just like I do. 11 years ago, 12 years ago, we see this on the schedule, and we don't want to admit it, but we're scared. We don't want to go to Seattle with the Upper Northwest. We don't want to be there. The flight sucks for the guys. The weather's usually crap, and they had that vaunted defense. Well, things have changed. We've got the vaunted defense, and they've got a sieve in the vaunted defense without a pass rush. And they've got maybe the worst high-paid free agent, free safety in the history of the NFL right now who could not catch a punt. Never mind an interception. He couldn't catch a punt. Ben Roethlisberger hit him in the face mask. And he just knocked it down and just kept running like everybody was, and no one was upset. Everybody was just like expecting it because he can't catch. So I don't know what's up with Jamal Adams, but it seems to me that he's lost a step in the pass game. His rush is still like he can thump, but he's more of a downhill linebacker now than he is a safety, in my opinion.
And I think so. I totally agree with that. Yeah, and I used to love Jamal. Well, I still do. I think he's a great football player. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's not. You can see the decline is happening.
He hasn't aged gracefully.
Not at all. But I think the weather. And you know, I was looking at. We have a local news reporter down here. Her name is Margaret Orr, and the weather's supposed to be pretty nasty Monday night.
Yeah, they're saying they're projecting a big storm coming through. So.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty nasty.
But we're built. I think we're built for that. I think we're built for exactly. that. I think our defense is they're pretty sound, you know. For the, like less the Giants game, I felt like we've been sound all year. Yeah. I thought in the red zone against the I almost said the Redskins against Washington. I thought we weren't as sound in our gaps in the run game in the red zone against Washington. Like they ran the ball pretty easily in the red zone. Not really. upset me when they scored a touchdown there because it didn't look
When they
like we
scored
could.
a touchdown.
Yeah, and I was like, nah, this. But again, that's our expectation, right? We've
Right.
had the expectation we're going to stop people on third down in the red zone and not allow them to get a touchdown. So, how do you think this game plays out? We're going to go there. The weather. Let's assume the weather's going to be bad. How do you think
So
this game
we're
plays out?
assuming the weather's going to be bad. I think it's going to be a defensive battle, but I do think we have a couple of big plays that come out of the pocket. So, I thought before the weather, I thought we're going to put up a few more touchdowns and Jameis was going to sling it around, but now that I think know that the weather's going to be crap. I'm going to say about 24-10. I still think, we get some bounces that go our way, a couple of turnovers. They're having trouble selling tickets in Seattle right now because I think the wind is out of their sails with Geno, and they're not excited at all. But we are, and we're coming off a bye. And I, with Sean Payton coming off a bye, I never bet against him. I never bet against him. He
Six
has
and
plenty of
six and
time
one.
to
Six and one, the
six
last
and
seven.
one. Yes, indeed, 6-1. So yeah, and then we, like I said, we're much healthier than what we were going into the bye. So I'm expecting this team to make some strides, and I want to see them. And I know, like I said, we're on the road in cold, nasty weather, but I still want to see that sound offense and defense. I want to see some sustained drives. So that's what I think is going to happen. I think that we're going to put our foot on the neck early. It's not going to be a close game. I don't feel like it would be,
It shouldn't be.
but
It
yeah.
shouldn't be. So we get a
What do
bunch
you
of
think?
bodies back, right? So we're getting back. I think we're getting back anywhere from 5 to 7 players for this game. One of which is going to be on special teams, which I think is going to pay huge dividends because our special teams units are really good. But he's a guy that really does like kind of lift up that unit. Chase Hansen's back, and I think that having him back is going to be big for special teams. Will Lutz was kicking field goals from 50 in practice yesterday, so I don't know if Sean's going to bring him out in the rain. I think that might be a bad idea. So we probably are going to roll. We're probably going to roll with the kid Brian Johnson for the one game. But I think we get back Kwon, we get back McCoy for sure. I really hope they just leave Armstead on the shelf for one more game because Hurst has been playing well, and Hurst is a very good veteran, tackle that we got. So let Teron just, I know he wants to come back and play, and the guy does seemingly never gets injured. Let him just rest one more week. What do you think about that?
Like I want him to. We need, if we can sneak out one more game with Hurst, which like you said, we were lucky to grab him. We really were, because he's
On
a
the
smart
cheap.
guy.
On the cheap.
Yeah, on the cheap, he's a smart guy too. So yeah, absolutely. But like I said, and I said this on fourth down and D, Nick Vannett is my favorite coming off IR because
Oh,
it allows Sean.
you just stole my thing, man.
I
Come
stole
on.
your juice. I'm sorry.
No, but you're right. You're right. No, you're right. You're 100% right. Like now, because with Vanette coming back, it takes the blocking responsibilities off of Troutman, and now we can actually use Troutman and. Like we might actually see the set finally that they were running in camp, the
Absolutely.
three tight end set
Right.
with
The three tight
Jawan,
end set.
yeah, with Jawan and Troutman and Vanette, and I think that will get all of the Saints fans off of Troutman's back because I thought he's been handling it well. Saints fans have been pissing on him, like you know what I mean, like just like this guy's supposed to be good and expectations and yada yada yada, and like the guy, what's he supposed to do? He wasn't brought in to be your blocking tight end,
The blocking tight end.
but it's all we got. Like it's all we got.
That's
Like
it.
if they put Steph Curry at center because everybody done died off the Warriors, not gonna be like, well, Steph's getting dunked on all the time. Listen, he's not a center. Like just easy. Like he's not supposed to be guarding Shaq. So just relax. I think it'll be interesting to see what that roster looks like with all those bodies coming back and Tre'Quan Smith. I really think having him as the Zed, and then allowing Callaway to move in and out, from outside on the X or playing the Y. Like that gives so much freedom because imagine this lineup for a second. Not now, but in the future. Michael Thomas, Marquez Callaway, Deontay Harris, Tre'Quan Smith, Alvin Kamara. Imagine that back. Like just imagine that's what you're trotting out. What defense are you playing? Because if you want to go and sell out against the run, good luck. Because in
Good
the because Cal
luck,
yeah
exactly, yeah.
Callaway and Mike are gonna beat you between the hashes. Deontay's going to take the top off, and you don't know what Traquan's going to do because he's got elite speed, and he can run and catch the ones across the middle as well.
Yeah. And I think we were missing that so much. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
I remember I heard...
I heard
Nick Underhill talk about this, and I give him credit for this because he made a good point. He says, Jameis isn't throwing across the middle a lot of time because he's trying not to throw turnover-worthy passes, and our guys aren't winning off the line. So
there
so you get like Hogan getting beat up on the line, or you get little Jordan Humphrey getting beat up on the line, and he's like, why am I gonna I don't trust you to get to that spot before the safety coming down, you know, in cover three is gonna get to that spot. So I can't throw the ball there. And he's throwing the ball in safer places. But yet Saints fans still want, listen, I have been an advocate for Jameis from day one when we got him. And I was like, he's a first round draft pick, first overall. Heisman, national championship, threw for 5,000 yards, and only, what, 8 guys have done it in the NFL in history? You know what I mean? Drew did it 5 times. Right. And, like, this guy's done all these things, and all you want to do is harp on one bad year of interceptions when every single quarterback that has Arians as a first-year coach has the most interceptions they've ever thrown in their career in their first year with Arians. So, like, these are correlated facts. And people want to be like, well, Jameis is, you know, old Jameis. Man, missing with that. The guy's done.
I hate it. I hate it with a passion because, like you said, this is all calculated response off of 1 year of football.
Mm-hmm.
1 year. Every time. I mean, like he wasn't actually put in a position to succeed in Tampa because it's Bruce Arians. You know what I'm saying? I don't feel like he's that smart of a coach. Mm-hmm. But you know, Tom Brady came in and kind of changed things around. But yeah, I mean, like give the guy a chance. He's doing well. He's doing well. He's not making a big mistake. You know, just let him play.
And he's only going to get better with. He gets all the weapons. Imagine you're telling a quarterback, hey, listen, you're in a new system. Everybody in the world thinks you're a turnover-worthy quarterback. And your best receiver is an undrafted free agent from Tennessee that nobody in the NFL wanted through 7 rounds of the NFL draft. And another undrafted free agent who's 5'7" and 160 pounds. That's your second best receiver. And then we got a guy playing lacrosse 6 months ago that's going to be your third receiver. Are you good? No, okay, cool.
And by the way, your center is going down. So.
that too. Oh, but you know what? And you're in the second hardest division in football. But you know what? You're one collapse from your defense away from being 4-1, and you have a winning record 3-2 going into your bye. But you know what? Let's keep on pissing on this guy because he's not very good. You know what's crazy? And let's call a spade a spade. If Jameis Winston was James Washington and he was white, there's no way that people would be shitting on Jameis the way they do. There is not a person. I watched all these Andy Dalton playing over Justin Fields. I watched like Nick Foles go on a tirade throwing picks left, right, and center. I watched Trevor Lawrence look like absolute dog excrement. And everybody's like, oh, but he's thrown some really good balls, though. He threw 3 interceptions in a game, and you guys are still praising the guy. But Jameis has thrown 3 interceptions all season, and you're still going to not give the man his flowers. It's irritating, but that's the climate that we live in. Hopefully he just changes it and makes him shut up. Anyway, I didn't give you my score. My score for the game, I got the Saints. This is going to be reminiscent of the Saints versus Giants at Meadowlands when Alvin Kamara had 2 touchdowns. And he broke a really long one late. I think the Saints are going to go 34-13. I think the game will be in the balance in the third quarter. And then I just think that we're going to rely on the run game. And I think we see maybe a couple of big screens now that McCoy's back in the game and Ruiz has some confidence going back to right guard. I think that's going to pay dividends. I think we beat the living crap out of him. I think, like you said, we're going to get a lot of turnovers. I would be the over under for me would be 2.5, and I'll take the over. I think we get at least 3. I guess the last thing I'm going to ask you after this, because we know the Saints going to win this game, we'll go to 4-2. 2 questions, actually. What are your season-long predictions now that you've seen 5 games and we're going into this? What's your season-long prediction for wins and losses? And then I know you listen to and talk to a lot of people and interact on Twitter. Who are your favorite 2 Saints media, like the big media guys that you... That you like to look at or talk to or, you know, read their stuff off of Twitter, like Ross Jackson, Nick Underhill, all those kind of guys.
So, let's see. Over, under, I'm still okay. Initially, I said like 11 wins. I'm still like 10 or 11 wins, right?
Okay.
Now.
Okay.
I think we do go to the playoffs if everything stays in balance and we stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I think we go into the playoffs. Now, do we make noise in the playoffs? I don't know. I can't tell you. I cannot tell you. Some mornings I wake up and I'm like, man, we might have a chance. Some mornings I wake up and I'm like, I'll just be happy to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just there's so many things that can happen. As you know, you know, have to be more lucky than good to do well in the NFL playoffs. So I'm going to say about 10 wins, mm-hmm. about 10 wins, 7 losses because now we're 17 games. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, that's a great showing for Jameis' first year, even if we do not grab that wild card from the NFC. I feel like that's a great showing for Jameis.
Okay. Pause for a second. All right.
Sure.
You say 10 wins, and I'm not going to jump on you, but I'm not a forever optimist, but I want you to tell me what games you think we're going to lose. I'm going to run them down for you. Ready?
Okay.
At Seahawks.
Win.
Versus the Bucks in the Dome.
Oh, I'm going to that game, but I think we take a L.
Okay, that's one. At home after the L versus the Falcons.
Win.
At the Titans. Without rely on the L. run game. You think we're going to lose? You think we lose to the Titans?
Yes.
They got hold on. They got nobody in the secondary, and Mike will be back by then. They're playing scrubs right now. They're playing Sterling Moore in the secondary right now. That's how bad it is for them. Like, they got bumps.
And I think because if you
okay.
We didn't play Derrick Henry last time we played the Titans, but always struggle with the Titans.
Okay, okay.
Don't know why.
Okay.
Don't know why, but Derrick Henry's healthy.
Okay.
And this time it might lean the other way.
Okay,
so.
Okay, so you got two there. Yeah. At the Eagles.
Okay. Win.
Versus the Bills. Thanksgiving.
We home or away with that one.
Hmm?
Are we home or away with that
one? We're home. That's in the Dome. Thursday, Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving in the Dome.
7:20.
Surprise win.
Yep. Yeah. versus the Cowboys, Thursday night football. In the Dome.
I'll never pick the Cowboys.
Yeah, me neither. I'm gonna be at that game. Okay. So if you can be at the game, we gotta have a drink.
We gotta have a drink, yeah.
At the Jets.
Win.
At the Bucks. I find it hard to believe Jameis is gonna lose twice to the Bucks, but that's just me.
Yeah. So how about this? Let's change the win and loss around. So we'll take the win at home and take the L on the road.
Okay. Versus the Dolphins at home, primetime, Monday.
That's
night
a
football.
Win. Yeah.
Versus the Panthers at home after that.
That's a win.
At the Falcons.
Win.
Okay, so you got us at 4 losses. So I'm letting you know we won with 13 games.
Are you serious?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like,
see,
our schedule
us to be that way. But
our schedule soft.
Yeah,
I know, but the schedule's soft. For the last 5 games, we get at the Jets, Dolphins, Panthers, Falcons. That's 4 wins. You know what I mean? Like, that's 4 wins.
Oh, my goodness, man.
Like, I can't see it. I
want it to be that great, Ryan. I really do. I want it to happen just like that, but I just don't know, man. I don't know.
Okay, let's split the difference. I said 13. You said 10. Let's call it 11.5. And if we end up above it, that's awesome. If we end up at 11, that's good.
There you go.
Okay.
We'll take it.
Okay. So then,
we'll take it.
So then we're done with that. And honestly, my record was 12-5. I thought 12-5 from the start of the season, and I look at the season now, and I still think 12-5.
12-5. Okay.
Yeah, like, I think we're gonna lose one of those primetime games to the Bills or the Cowboys. We'll lose one of those games. And I think we have a chance to lose the Titans game. I actually have a feeling that we might lose that Philly game, just like a weird one that the Saints do every year. But that was
last year we lost against them too. Yeah,
that was Kwan's fault. That run by Miles Sanders, all Kwan.
Yeah. Gosh.
Anyways, who do you rock with on Twitter that you get your Saints information from, and you're like, yeah, I like these people. Who are you two people?
Oh yeah, number one, Nick Underhill. I've been following Nick before he was even verified. We used to just talk about Saints stuff, and he was
he's the
just
GOAT.
always had a little inside, and it just kind of had an understanding of how the players move. So I kind of just stayed with him, and now, you know, he's doing his own thing, and everybody's the trusted source for Saints information. And then number two, I like Catherine Terrell, of course. Ross Jackson, you know, all of those, you know, after that, anything local, I'll believe before the national media, but even though Sean gives the information to the national media before he does local, but we tend to hear more from our players than we do from Sean, so.
Yeah, I love, I've had a bunch of those guys on our podcast. They've all come on. Like, I think I've had them all, actually. I've had Kat, I've had Larry Holder, Jeff Duncan, Nick Underhill, Ross Jackson, Chris Rosboglu. I've had a bunch of them. And for me, like, Nick's obviously the GOAT. And he's always so damn busy because he's got everybody interacting with him. But Ross Jackson, man, that guy, I just show so much love to Ross because that guy works like, he's like truly a Jamaican. Like, the guy's got nine jobs. You know what I mean? Like, the man is just always working. Like, and just, and like, have you ever heard Ross Jackson say a disparaging word about another human being on the planet? It's just not possible.
Not a single one. It's not possible.
Salt of the earth, man. For me, when I first came to Louisiana, right? And like, I was rolling around and I was by myself the first time I came down there. And I was like, I'm going. Everybody just took, people just took me in. Like, the love was so real. And I just, like, for myself, I'm like, this is my place. Like, I'm going to be here all as much as I can in life. I'm going to be here because the people are just so damn kind to me. I brought my mom down for the Halloween game back in the day. It was the Halloween game in the Dome against the Steelers.
I remember that game.
And like my mom, I was like, Mom, we're going to go tailgate and whatever, blah, blah. And like these people brought us into like their little tent thing, and they had like pots of gumbo and like, you know what I mean? Like it was unreal. Like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I just had this in the store, and I was like, it was delicious, but this is way better. Fried oysters, you know what I mean? I was just like, this is so wicked. People throwing you a brew here and there, being like, have a sip, you good. And you're like, this is like really Southern hospitality. People just looking out for each other. And I thought that was really, it's really speaking to the city itself, and I thought that was really awesome. So Ross strikes me as,
you'll never go hungry.
I love it, man.
Ross is a great guy. He really is.
Yeah. Anyways, I kept you on here way too long. I am so sorry I took up your day, afternoon.
Ryan, this was great, man. I had a good time. Thank you so much for having me on.
But do you want to let the people know again? You're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter at Saint Soldier. And YouTube. S-O-U-L-J-A. My YouTube is Fourth Down in D. Come and interact and have a good time.
And subscribe. So don't just show up. Subscribe. You got
subscribe.
Like 5.
Yeah.
You got like 500 there. Let's get that up to 1,000 because you deserve it.
I'm trying, man.
You keep doing your thing, man. And like, if we can get you on here again, that'd be fantastic because this was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate you, bro.
All right, man. You take care of yourself and stay blessed. Who dat?
You do the same.